are back. You're listening to You Would Think, the Philadelphia Flyers podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Collington. Joining me today, the first show of 2020. It is the one, the only, it's Mr. Mike Giletto Sr. How you doing?
Well, hey, I'm doing very well. How's everybody doing? Happy New Year 2020. Everybody, a great and wonderful, happy and healthy New Year.
Absolutely. This is our first show of 2020. Thank you guys very much for listening and sharing our best of episode last week. It did pretty good.
Hope everyone enjoyed it. And by the end of 2020, we want to be sprawled across America.
Absolutely. Flyers fans everywhere, hopefully, will be listening to us by the end of the year. 2020 is going to be a big year. We got a lot going on.
Yeah, Flyers fans and hockey fans everywhere.
Yeah, hopefully. We got a lot going on. But before we get into today's show, you can find the show on Twitter at YWT Podcast. You can also find Mike at Mike from S Jersey and producer Mike at Mike _ Giletto. You can also find the show anywhere on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcast, SportsTalkPhilly.com, Spotify. You know, we're everywhere. You guys know the drill by now. It's been a rough week. It's been a rough couple weeks. But before we get into that, let's keep it nice and fresh. How was your holiday season, sir? Good Christmas with the family?
My Christmas was fantastic. New Year's was a little rough. Everyone in the house has been a little under the weather. So it was actually a good idea that we did a best of show last week, because it would have been tough to get one off the ground. But everyone's feeling much better now. So 2020 has to go much better than the beginning of 2020.
Yeah, and it'll look up from here. And that's one of the reasons we did the best of episode, because between Christmas and New Year's, everybody's running around anyway. And let's face it, everybody ends up a little bit sick after dealing with 8 million people on Christmas and New Year's.
Correct.
So we kind of expected something like that. But we're back. We're ready to go. 2020's fresh. First new show of 2020. It's good to be here.
And here's the bad part. As bad as my week was, the Flyers was worse.
The Flyers week was worse. It's been 2 weeks since we recorded live. And since then, man, there haven't been many W's. We recorded our last live show on December 22nd, right before Christmas.
And in that episode, I had mentioned they better get off to a good start on this road trip. Because when the road trip's over, or at least get off to a good start so they have a good road trip, because after the 6-game road trip, it gets brutal.
Yep, and they responded by going 2-4 on that road trip.
1-4 with one more to go.
Well, yeah, if you include the Rangers game since our last recording, they've gone 2-4 since our last live show.
Oh, right.
But, 1-4 on this road trip so far with a Tuesday matchup against Carolina, who's not an easy team. The next 6 teams that the Flyers play are all currently in playoff positions.
Best team in the league, or the most points in the league, or the top seed last year who just didn't do well in the playoffs and are hungover. The schedule is brutal.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And rewinding, you know, most of those games have been on the road, obviously. We're doing the West Coast road trip. That Monday game was the last game at Wells Fargo Center. The next game at Wells Fargo Center will be Wednesday night against Washington. So, you know, you come back from the West Coast and you have a road game in Carolina on Tuesday. That's going to be a hard game as it is. But then you got to turn around and play the Washington Capitals on Wednesday. And, yeah, you get to come home, but Washington's a good team.
The schedule's brutal. But let's do backwards before we go forward.
Okay. So Saturday night, Arizona. That game was bad. It was just a bad game. It really was.
Yeah, I didn't freak out or panic over that one game. Everybody plays a bad game.
No, because Arizona's a good team. Going backwards, Vegas. You went down early to Vegas. You clawed back. You made it a competitive game. You had almost a full 2 minutes of 5-on-3 at the end of the third period. You couldn't convert. And Marc-Andre Fleury played a great game, but at the same time, you have almost a full minute.
Yeah, the schedule's brutal. Let's do backwards before we go forwards.
A 5-on-3 time in a 1-goal game with your goalie pulled. You're 6-on-3 for a lot of that. And you can't put one by Fleury. It's tough.
Yeah. I didn't freak out or panic over that one game. Everybody plays a bad game.
You dug yourself in the hole by going down 3-1 in the first period. You know, you ended the first period 4-2. Now you're clawing from behind. Cody Glass scores in the second. It's 5-2. Now you're crawling up from underneath, and yeah, Couturier gets two and makes it, you know, look good, but they weren't ever really going to win that game, huh?
No, and that's been the theme, the Kings game.
Yep.
It was just, it fell way, way deep in the hole. Do you remember early on, one of the episodes Kevin was on, the Flyers' record was much better than the statistics indicated.
Yes.
And I asked you and both Kevin, why? Like, what's going on? Like, what? How can we have this lack of point totals for the players themselves, but the team point total was terrific? And I think we all kind of settled on the goaltenders have been terrific.
Yes.
And I will say, in the last five games in this 1-4 stretch on the road, goaltending hasn't been good.
I'll agree with that.
And more importantly than not good, kind of the Flyers' theme this year has been come out the first 10 minutes, feel their way through the game, get some good saves, get some big saves, maybe score a goal, maybe don't score a goal, maybe they're up 1-0, down 1-0, or 0-0 after the first, and then the Jets take off,
but,
and it's the second, third period.
Right.
Right, and then they're real good in the second, third period, and they win the majority of the games. That's
yeah, the
kind
third
of been,
period has been
not
their
every
best
game,
period.
But formula. That's been the general formula. Again, not every game, but the general formula. That has not been the case. The goaltenders have not played well. They've not played well early. They've fallen behind. Even if it's not giving up soft goals, they're not making the big save, although there have been some soft goals. And then there's the huge white elephant in the room. What in God's name is wrong with Carter Hart on the road?
Yeah.
This is a real freaking problem.
It's a real problem. And we saw him get pulled Saturday night against Arizona. We saw him get pulled against the Kings.
Yep. This is not, as they say, small sample size. This is a half a season that he is playing bad on the road constantly.
Yep. And over the five games that they've swung out west for, he's gotten pulled twice.
Yeah, I mean, you can't not play him in five straight games. You can't just give Elliott all five games. But
right, and the best goaltending performance of the week was Elliott in that 2-1 win against Anaheim last Sunday.
Correct. Who they scratched and clawed to get that win in Anaheim stinks. So it's really been a bad
overtime
road trip.
Yeah,
correct.
It's been an awful road trip. I will agree with you there. Since the Christmas break, again, we've talked about it. The Flyers are 1-4. And it's...
Right.
It's one of those things that the division is so close and the conference is so close and the playoff race is so close, you can't afford stretches like this. The Flyers, looking back, the three teams chasing the Flyers for that second wild card, Florida, Columbus, Buffalo, they're all within 4 points.
Right. Look, unless this is who they are and who they become and then they go 10 games under 500 the rest of the year and miss the playoffs, this stretch isn't going to stop them from accomplishing some of the goals and having a decent season. What it's definitely going to do potentially is stop them from being a three seed and avoiding Boston or Washington in the first round. It may already be too late to avoid that.
Right. Now, they are only 3 points behind the Islanders for that third divisional spot. But the Islanders have two games in hand.
I was going to say they have games in hand.
To make up points this time of year. Yeah. And like we just talked about, the upcoming stretch is tough. Like, over the Flyers' next several games, you have Carolina on Tuesday, Washington Wednesday, and then Tampa, Boston, St. Louis, and even Montreal are all teams that are playoff teams already or expect to be contenders.
Yep.
Montreal, by the way, I don't know if you saw this. Montreal signed Ilya Kovalchuk the other day.
No, I didn't see that. What's he?
Yeah, so they
42-way
deal. Something like 36.
He's
37.
Old. I'm surprised he's not older than that.
Two-way deal, $700K.
Okay.
It's low risk for Montreal, but either way.
I think it's low risk, low reward as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But if he comes out and scores 10 goals the rest of the year, you're not going to get 10 goals from many minimum salary guys. So, you know, you take it if you're Montreal.
He's got a little bit of Jake Voracek in him, though. He might score 10 but give up 7.
Well, I mean, he's also 1,000 years old and can't skate, so... You got to give him a little bit of a break.
No, I understand.
But
I understand.
Either way,
okay,
coming
look,
up,
when
coming
brought,
up,
when they brought Jágr back, they got some, not them specifically, but when Jágr came back, he was able to help at a very old age. So maybe he can help.
Exactly. But either way, coming up, it's a tough stretch. Carolina, Washington, Tampa, Boston, St. Louis, and even into Montreal.
Yeah.
After that, you play the Kings and the Pittsburgh, and then you're on your bye week. So the bye week is coming up. We're only a couple of weeks away. We got to figure out what we're doing for that show, by the way.
Gotcha.
But during that week is All-Star Weekend, and we'll talk about that towards the end of the show. But coming up, do the Flyers need to win 3 of the next 6?
I think they need to do better than that to right the ship of You really need to beat Carolina.
Six or 7 points. Yeah, if you get 6 or 7 points out of the next six games, I think you're pretty happy with it. Especially because after that, February kind of opens up a little bit. We got some bad teams in February, and you can really start accruing some points. But the Flyers are also done playing. For the most part, the Flyers are done playing the Western Conference.
Which I would say is not necessarily a good thing because it's the worst conference, but they haven't played well against them.
I agree. And, you know, you really want to see the Flyers pick up some points over the next couple weeks here, because after the All-Star game, the next kind of big league event is the trade deadline. And starting with All-Star weekend is when trade deadline season begins for a lot of teams. That's when you start seeing trade deadline deals going down. And I'd like to see the Flyers buy, but at the same time, we're tied up against the cap. And I don't know what's out there. You know, we'll see, but I don't know who the Flyers could add that, you know, that makes sense.
Well, you can always use a defenseman, but I don't think they'll, you know, I don't think they'll do anything crazy to land, you know.
Yeah, I don't think you're paying big money for a defenseman,
and they won't just bring in a guy. I think what they have is enough to not bring in just a guy. On the forward end, obviously they need some help. They need some replacement. We all know what's going on there with some of the missing, with the major missing piece. And, you know, hopefully he's doing well. Obviously, I'm referencing Oscar.
Of course.
Just from a hockey standpoint, aside from some of the other players who've either been sent down or aren't performing, they definitely need to add a forward. And that's where I'm hoping that they add. And depending on what they do over the next 5 or 6 games, if they can run a 4-2 stretch going into that bye week, then I definitely think as the deadline gets closer, the management will definitely add, whether it's a major piece, but they will definitely add a forward body without a doubt.
I think that's fairly reasonable. And as teams kind of start to fall out of the playoff race,
Becomes available, right?
Exactly. Looking out west, a team like San Jose is a tough team to deal with because they're not a great team. They're currently sitting 7 points out of a playoff spot, but they also don't have their first round pick. So they can't afford to really hit the tank and sell everybody and blah, blah, blah. But right above them in the standings is a team like Chicago.
Yeah, they have some pieces.
Chicago has some pieces that could move. I don't think they would move any of the big guys.
No,
I don't think,
no.
You know.
Too complicated. They're moving,
right, even Keith. Yeah. Honestly, I don't think they're moving. If they move a guy like Kane or Taves, and I think they only have, 2 years left on those deals? It's time to start having that conversation if you're Chicago.
I agree, but I think that's more of an...
Either way, it won't be here.
Yeah, and I think it's more of an off-season move because I think it would be so complicated to move somebody like that.
Well, let's think about it like this. What do you have to add to Jake Voracek to get Patrick Kane? Because money-wise, they're, you know, they're close enough that we can make it work. But what are you adding to Jake Voracek? Do you add Morgan Frost? If they say Jake Voracek and Morgan Frost get you Patrick Kane for a year and a half or whatever it is, do you think about it?
I wouldn't. Not that specific deal. I think Frost has enough upside, and we're not close enough to winning the cup where Kane gets us over the hump.
You don't think so? Really?
No, not once you lose Voracek, too.
Well, I thought that would be a net positive for you. Well, you know, I know how you feel about Jake.
Yeah, personally it is. But you're upgrading significantly at one forward position. You're diminishing some of your future. And that takes completely out of the equation the fact that I don't think Chicago would do that.
No, I mean, if it's Frost and a first, maybe they think
exactly,
about it. But
exactly.
Like,
much more inclined to do young players and picks than take on a salary like Voracek. You know,
They would need to take on Voracek's salary just to make the money work at all on the Flyers' end.
Right. But
regardless, I don't necessarily know if they're going to make a big splash like that, but there's definitely going to be guys available out of Chicago, out of San Jose, you know, out of New Jersey maybe. You know, maybe Wayne Simmonds becomes available at half salary. You know, something along those lines. There's definitely going to be, you know, Chuck's definitely going to be doing his due diligence as our, you know, as our GM.
Yeah.
He's definitely going to be calling teams. He's definitely going to be doing what he needs to do. But the Flyers cap situation makes it tough. At a certain point, you got to make a decision on Nolan Patrick. You got to make a decision on, you know, these other guys who are, you know, kind of bouncing around. And, you know, Oscar Lindblom is obviously off the books at this point. And it really is crazy. Over the last 2 weeks or so, it really is insane how losing one player has absolutely crippled the Flyers' depth. We're sitting here 2 or 3 weeks ago talking about the depth scoring and the team looks great. The bottom six looks fantastic, blah, blah, blah.
Because they didn't have to be top six.
Exactly. Yeah. Now we lose Lindblom, and like, yeah, the fourth line with Raffle and Pitlick still looks great. But that third line is just not producing the way it was a month ago. Same with the second line and the first line. Like, the whole team has just slowed down immensely. And I know everyone's upset about Oscar Lindblom off the ice, but at a certain point, you have to replace his production on the ice.
They're going to have to. And if you go back maybe 5 or 6 episodes, we did the Size Matters episode. That's the type of guy, and I know you're not going to add a guy of this caliber, but a Wheeler, a Scheifele, you know, something like that. Even a low rent version of that, to put that, you know, put somebody, you know, maybe in that $2-4 million range rather than $8 million range, and the poor man's Scheifele or the poor man's Wheeler. That is really what this team could desperately use, without Oscar being here.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, I'm still a little under the weather, so bear with me.
I agree that kind of thing would be nice, and that's why I brought up a name like Wayne Simmonds, because he's a little old.
That's
he's a little beat up. He's a poor man's version. Yeah, I totally understand. But if you get him at a reasonable rate, you know, we know him here. You know, he's not going to have trouble fitting into the locker room.
Oh yeah, no. If you get him at a bargain basement price, he's certainly not going to hurt your team, and he can certainly help.
Exactly. So he might be a guy that the Flyers look at. Now, I don't know if the Devils are going to want to trade him in division, and you know, you get into that whole debate.
Well, how long do they have him? Was it a 1 year deal?
It was a 1 year, $5 million deal. So yeah, I think they looked at it as a prove it deal.
Yeah, if you give him a couple of good hockey sticks, you can get that deal done. They're not sending Simmonds here in his prime for 4 years. I don't think that'll be a consideration. That'll be whatever the haul gets them the most. You know, whatever the haul is for what they get, it doesn't really matter where they send him.
You know what? I'll take him back in a heartbeat. I don't care if he can't play hockey. I'll take him back in a heartbeat.
Yeah, no, I would definitely give that a shot. Again, there's no risk. Getting low risk, low reward. Like, oh, same situation. So,
listen, you
as long as you're not giving up Frost for him or something like that, crazy.
You play the Penguins right before the bye week and right after the bye week. I would love to have Wayne Simmonds on my roster for both those games.
Yeah, sure.
He's always looked up for the Penguins. Moving along, we did also get some news over the holiday season that the All-Star rosters had been announced.
Yep.
And as everyone predicted, the Flyers representative was Travis Konecny.
Shocker.
Okay. I was a little surprised, honestly, because I didn't
surprised
think...
that he was their only selection, or surprised that he was selected?
If the Flyers got one player, I'm surprised that it was Travis Konecny, just because I don't think he has the league-wide name recognition that Giroux has, or Voracek has, or Couturier is starting to get, or Provorov has. I don't disagree with it. I think he has earned the selection.
Oh, 100%. It's the right...
Right, and I'm not debating that.
Surprise, not surprised. Yeah, exactly. 100, they got it right. That's number one.
Given the fact that the NHL just kind of picked the teams... I'm surprised he was the pick over a guy like Claude or Jake or somebody with maybe a little more name recognition. You know, maybe they pick Carter Hart just to get the flashy new kid in or something along those lines. I'm surprised that Konecny was the league's choice.
If they were 2-3 points out of a playoff spot in the 9th or 10th position, I think you see them do a Giroux thing. Okay?
Yeah.
The fact that what Konecny has done has led to wins and being in playoff position, and this was all being done at a time where the 1-4 fall hadn't taken place, so we were actually not just in position, but we're in potential position to pick up third
in
place.
A really good spot.
Exactly.
For sure, yeah.
So I think it was much a reward to Travis's season as it was to say, hey Travis, not only are you having this terrific season, you really matter to what your team is doing, so you're going to get the nod. I think that had a lot to do with it, and deservedly so. They got it 100% right.
Yep, and Konecny is probably going to be a little bit overshadowed during this All-Star game. The rest of the Metro team, I'm going to read out all the teams here pretty quickly. But the Metro team.
Before you do that, correct me if I'm wrong. Provorov was not selected.
Provorov was not selected, but he did receive votes.
That's correct. I'll save that for your question later. Go ahead.
Okay. The forwards for the Metro team: Ovechkin, Matt Barzal, Taylor Hall, which was a weird selection, but I get it. Travis Konecny, Artemi Panarin, Andrei Svechnikov. That's a fun team.
Yeah.
Konecny might be the fifth or sixth most talented guy on that list.
You know what's funny?
And I like him a lot. You know what's funny? He's not ahead of Ovechkin. He's not ahead of Hall. He's not ahead of Panarin. He's not ahead of... Like, he might be ahead of Barzal and Svechnikov, and that's about it, and that's 50-50.
You know what's funny about that list? Those six that you just named? Looking at it, strictly in the format. I mean, Ovechkin's light years ahead of, you know, everybody. Of course. In the 3-on-3 format...
It's going to be fun.
Ovechkin might be the least, you know, the least skilled.
He might be the least productive in the game.
For those six players.
In the actual All-Star game, he might be the least productive.
Exactly.
The defensive core, by the way, is John Carlson. No surprise. Dougie Hamilton and Seth Jones. And then the goalies are Thomas Greiss and Matt Murray. So when's the last time there was an All-Star game and the Pittsburgh Penguins' only representative was the backup goalie?
Because of Crosby's injury, but...
Of course, and he did also receive votes, and there's a whole voting thing going on right now about last man in, and it wouldn't surprise me if he gets there as the fan selection.
Yeah, that's definitely possible.
Also, if you look at those forwards, who's winning faceoffs? Like, Barzal's the only center on that list, and he's like... not really a face-off guy. So
yeah, that's true.
I know that's true. I know that's not the point of the All-Star game.
No, but it's a little more important in a 3-on-3.
Right. Having someone in there you know, say what you want about Sidney Crosby, but he's going to go in and win 65% of the draws.
Yeah.
So if you want the Metro to win, you probably want Sidney Crosby elected to the team.
Right.
And I know that hurts, and it hurts me too, but if you want the Metro to win, that's probably the correct decision.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I do think also Matt Murray was a bad selection.
I agree, but I think you kind of had to pick a Penguin there. And with Crosby missing a significant amount of time, with Malkin missing a significant amount of time, now with Gensel missing a significant amount of time,
I understand all that, but as much as I don't think he's very good, Mrazek's definitely had a better season.
No, for sure. But I'm talking about from the Penguins. Like, who makes it over him? You know, maybe you put Chris Letang in.
Yeah, but if Letang's going to... Who do you take out if you put Letang in?
Exactly. See, I mean, you can pretty easily take Dougie Hamilton out. You still have the Hurricanes representative with Svechnikov. Right. You know, you can make it work. But
look, Murray being there, it's not like he's stopping, you know, Marty Brodeur in his prime from being there. So it's not like it's so obscene. But just, you know, he's a Penguin and doesn't deserve it, so I got to mention it.
And honestly, the guys who get picked to play goalie in the 3-on-3 All-Star game...
Right.
They're not getting picked to play goalie.
And hopefully he gets lit up and loses even more confidence.
Right. Either way, we will run through the rest of the teams real quick. In the Atlantic, Pasternak, Eichel, Huberdeau, Anthony Mantha, Brad Marchand, Austin Matthews. Defensemen are Shabbat, Hedman, Weber. Goalies are Carey Price and Tuukka Rask. Turns out that's just a really good team.
Yeah, what jumps out at me there is you've got a Boston Bruins team that has... Bergeron on it, and they have two forwards on that team, and he's not one of them. That's how good that team has been this year.
And even more outrageous is nobody is clamoring that Bergeron got snubbed.
Right, exactly. And again, they got it right. Those are the two that should
exactly
be there.
No one. Yeah. There are very few. I'm sure there are a couple Boston Bruins fans complaining about it. But generally,
he had some injury issues as well.
But
you know.
nobody is sitting here going, "Oh, how do you not put Bergeron in? That's a disaster." Like, who does he go in over? Like me? Like, he doesn't go in over Pasternak because Pasternak has like 34 goals and it's ridiculous. I think he's got 32. He scored another one last night. He doesn't go in over Eichel, who is single-handedly keeping the Buffalo Sabres in a playoff conversation.
Yeah, he's MVP-worthy.
Jonathan Huberdeau is your Florida Panthers representative, which is weird because it's not Barkov, but whatever.
He is arguably outplaying Barkov.
Right.
Yeah.
Anthony Mantha is the Detroit Red Wings candidate. you're not going to put him in over Marchand.
No.
You're not going to put him in over Matthews, because Matthews has almost as many goals as Pastrnak, by the way.
Right, and he's turned it up a notch.
Right, I don't know if you're paying attention, but Pastrnak's got 31 or 32, and yep. Austin's sitting there at like 28.
Yeah, he's on his heels.
Like, he might score 50 this year, and that wouldn't be insane.
I'm glad scoring as a whole is up. That's a yeah. good thing.
And it has been over the last couple of years.
And you know what I've been noticing as one of the reasons why?
The game's in color when you watch? It's not in black and white?
A good while back, the whole butterfly style developed because somebody analytically figured out that 80% of the goals were scored in the bottom 6 inches of the net. So yeah. If you take that away, goal scoring decreased a lot. Have you noticed a lot of goals are going up high?
Well, it turns out
they finally shifted their thought.
Exactly.
And the players are they're roofing them.
And to be fair, I don't know if the butterfly was as big an invention to the goaltending position as like actually working out and training and caring. Cuz up until about 1994, goalies were kind of just dudes. And there were good ones, and there were great ones, but they weren't, they didn't work out to the level that other players did.
No, I disagree with you there. I think the single biggest reason why scoring is down as much as it has been over the last 20 years, give or take, is the butterfly.
Okay, because
I mean, I know I'm going to mention dinosaur people, but Mike Bossy scored 60 goals, and probably 25 of them were to the stand-up goalie, and he just to the left, just to the right of the skate, or just to the left, to the right of the pad, and it's in the net. It's not, he's not, probably 75% of his goals were in the bottom 6 inches of the net, and yep. they didn't butterfly then.
You can say the same thing about Wayne Gretzky, honestly. How many of his were kind of just clappers from the high slot that slid along the ice the whole time?
Yep. So it took them a really, really long time to adjust to the butterfly, I think, but I think they're finally starting to do it.
And now the league is starting to trim down the equipment a little tiny bit, giving shooters that little hole. And part of that little hole, by the way, I do also want to talk a little bit about the advent of the trick shots that we're seeing this year. We've seen Andrei Svechnikov score the Michigan-style lacrosse goal twice this year in game.
Yeah.
And once he had the puck behind the net and scooped it up and kind of made a little bit of a production out of it and kind of got it in there. The second goal, have you gone and seen the Winnipeg, the one he scored against Winnipeg?
Yeah, if there can be such a thing as a bang-bang lacrosse goal.
Right. He was skating behind the net, right, fighting to get possession, scooped up a bouncing puck, and just tucked it right in.
Right. Yeah, there was no pre-thought. It was all reaction.
Exactly. It was in the moment, boom, let me do it. And we've seen other players try it. We saw Austin Matthews try it. There have been a couple of different attempts throughout the league over the last couple of weeks. We saw Nils Höglander hit it in the World Junior Championships, which I don't know if you're following, but I'm paying attention to.
Understood.
We saw Nils Höglander do it in the highest level of World Juniors play. That's a big deal. He just kind of picked it up and did the lacrosse goal, did the Michigan.
Yeah.
So anything to get the puck three in the last two months.
Yeah.
Yep. You want to talk about elevating the puck?
How about picking it up and
just tucking it up under the crossbar?
Yep.
And guys now can just kind of do that. It's crazy how that's in 5 years it won't be special. I guarantee it. It'll be like, oh, that was a cool goal, but it won't be. It won't be, oh my God.
What do you think the reason for it is?
I just think the guys are so...
You're going to say more skilled.
Well, not just more skilled, but I think players are starting from an earlier age.
And I think
guys...
You don't think Gretzky started playing when he was three?
Well, listen, let me explain. Guys now have the space to do that. Because if you think about it, since the first, the big lockout, the 04-05 lockout... The game's gotten faster. Getting rid of the two-line pass.
100%
putting the trapezoid
faster, absolutely.
In. Right, putting the trapezoid in. And then after the second lockout, you saw holding penalties go way up, tripping, hooking, all these obstruction penalties picked way up, and they got way, way, way tighter on what they call and what they don't call, and clutch and grab died.
Yeah, which is a good thing.
Exactly. And with that, you see increased offense, and we've seen it. That's also when they went to the 3-on-3 overtime. If you remember, it was like 4-on-4 for a year, and it was weird. But eventually they got to the 3-on-3 because after the secondary lockout in 2012, they decided they wanted more offense. And every rule change that came out of that lockout was designed to gear offense forward. And part of that was giving players time and space to make these kinds of moves. And it's taken this long because...
Well, I think they gave him time.
The last generation was already here.
Yeah,
this is the next generation rolling out with Svechnikov and the Austin Matthews players. And, you know, this kind of youth and skill and speed is something we haven't seen in a very, very long time with the space now given to players to make moves.
I'm going to give a secondary reason for it. I do think time and space is a small element to it. I'll agree with that to a small extent. I think it's where that is met with equipment. I believe.
Okay.
I believe the gloves are better. I believe the feel in the glove to the stick is better. The sticks are 1,000 times better. I think equipment is making it easier to do stuff like that. I'm sure if you gave Gretzky that, you know, this, the composite sticks that bend and tweak the way they do now, and he didn't have to play with wood, I'm sure he had that feel in his gloves that it was like playing with his hands, not in this wrapped big glove. I'm sure he would have done some additional amazing shit as well.
I don't disagree with that at all, but I think the lack of calls is like a big deal because it doesn't matter if Gretzky can get the puck up on his stick because when he comes around the corner, somebody's going to knock him down. Somebody's going to run him.
You think somebody didn't try to knock with Svechnikov? Do you think somebody, if you could have hit him, they would have. They just didn't see it coming.
Well, and you've seen that come, right? You've seen teams start to really pinch down on the outside of the net defensively when a guy has the puck behind the net because Svechnikov has proven that you have to.
Yeah, it's something you have to look for now.
Right? How much time did Gretzky spend behind the net in his career? It's called Gretzky's office. 30, it's 40, still to this
30,
day.
40%.
It is still to this day referred to as Gretzky's office.
Yep.
How much less time does he get back there if he has the ability to flip it up on his stick and lacrosse it in? How much more do guys collapse down on him? And whether that's a good thing or not, that opens up the front of the net.
No, what I'm saying is if he could have dominated the way he did without being able to get that time and space and room that he would have gotten today, and you give him the equipment on top of it, he would have been even more devastating from behind the net.
Oh, right. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. We're on the same page. I thought you were saying the opposite.
Right. No, I admit that Wayne Gretzky is a more skilled player than Andrei Svechnikov. I don't think that's a hot take.
Well, skill in what regard?
Compared to the rest of the league. Wayne Gretzky was the best player in the league for 10 years, and it wasn't really close.
Did he win the MVP 8 straight years? Did you know that?
Yeah. I'm surprised it wasn't more.
He won 9 overall, but he won 8 straight. But go ahead.
How did he not just win it every year? Like, that's the thing. But Wayne Gretzky is better for his era than Andrei Svechnikov is now. I don't think that's really debatable, right? Wayne Gretzky is the best player of all time.
Maybe the best player in sports history.
Right. If you drop Andrei Svechnikov in 1986 with his current equipment, with his current everything, you know, you talked about the sticks and the gloves and the blah, blah, blah.
No, he's not. He's not.
He would be good.
He would be good. Right. No,
he wouldn't be Gretzky.
It wouldn't be Gretzky and Svechnikov.
Right. Now, if you take Gretzky and put him in the modern day game with his equipment, he's probably not great, honestly.
Oh, I disagree. No, I disagree.
I think he's fine.
I think he's Wayne dominant. Gretzky. I don't think he's any more, but he's
I'm talking about with his age-appropriate equipment. If he's playing with a one-piece Sherwood made of all wood, then I think he struggles.
If he played with a straight blade, he would have been one of the greatest players in sports history. Either way, what made him was his 90% of what made him was his vision, and that's never going to go away. The anticipation that he played with, the vision that he played with.
Well, he only weighed 185, right?
Yeah.
So he wasn't big enough to really get himself in the corners and play that big hockey that you're talking about.
It was a different
right?
NHL at the time, first of all.
Well, right, but I'm talking about dropping him into the current NHL.
And, And there are
guys. He's not big enough.
I'm not saying you can't win with a guy who's 180, 85 pounds. I'm saying you can't win with eight of them. Okay.
Okay.
But that's that conversation is different. And
yeah, you're moving the goalposts. I understand.
And if you are a great player, it doesn't matter what your size is. You're a great player. His vision and his will and his anticipation. He always played the game not where the puck is, where it's going.
If you drop a 20-year-old or 22-year-old Wayne Gretzky into the NHL today, and then you start a league-wide fantasy draft, every team is empty, every team has a player, is he the first pick or is it McDavid?
I would try to draft him 3 years prior at 16.
Okay.
That's how there is no period at any point in time from 1900 to 2100 that he's not the first selection in anything you do. He's that good.
Okay.
If Babe Ruth is in the draft, then you maybe consider, you know, Babe Ruth is a distant second greatest player of all time.
It kind of depends on what sport you're playing
at that point. Yeah, I'm talking about sports history. There's Gretzky, Ruth, and then everybody else.
Okay.
He was that good. He has more assists than anybody else has points.
I mean, that's the stat.
You know, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, it turns out Wayne Gretzky's really good.
He was way better than that.
I don't know how we've gone this far off topic. This started with the All-Star teams.
Well, it started with the skills that these crazy young kids are playing with.
Right, okay, so I read off...
If it wasn't for these meddling kids, we'd be on a different topic.
I read off the Atlantic team. I read off the Metro team. Central Division.
Right.
The forwards. Forwards. Nathan MacKinnon, Patrick Kane, David Perron, Mark Scheifele, Tyler Seguin, Eric Staal. Nothing crazy there. Perron's having a really, really good season.
The only surprise for me there, because Staal's having a really, really terrific season, the only is Seguin. As far as Perron's definitely a surprise too, but he deserves it. I don't think Seguin deserves to be on that team, but that's just me.
I don't know, man. He's really good. And they're coming around, so I think they're going to make a run.
I'm not a big fan.
Okay. No, that's fair. And, you know, he's had a little bit of a down season. He's got 32 points in 42 games, so not spectacular. Tyler Seguin's only on about a 60-point pace.
Yeah, I don't think he plays winning hockey on top of it. It's not the lack of points for me. It's the other things that he doesn't do on the ice that I have a problem with. But
okay.
I'm not sure who should be there in his place.
Right, I was going to say. So the other receiving votes, Patrick Laine, Zach Parise, Ryan O'Reilly, Brayton Schenn, Jason Zucker were the other forwards.
Yeah, I'd say O'Reilly.
Not even Laine.
Not a
three-on-three game.
Right. Yeah. Laine would be very good in a three-on-three. I think just as far as all-star selection, forgetting the format, I think Ryan O'Reilly definitely deserves to be an all-star over Seguin.
That's fair. The defensemen for this team are Miro Heiskanen, Roman Josi, and Cale Makar. And that's a daunting blue line. Cale Makar is really, really good.
What on the Flyers would you not trade for Makar?
I wouldn't trade Carter Hart.
See, I think I would do that, but go ahead. I wouldn't do that because it took him so... If he's the guy, it took him so long to get the guy, I probably wouldn't do that. Let me take that back.
That's why I said... Other than that,
I don't think there's a combination.
That's the end of the list for single assets for sure.
Yeah.
Any
combination of guys I think I would do.
This might be a little homerist, and I love Cale Makar. I wouldn't trade Ivan Provorov for him one for one.
I love Provorov, but I drive him to the airport. I think Makar's got like 6-7 potential, Norris trophies in him.
Thing.
I really do.
Here's my thing. This is why, I don't think that would be terrible. If the Flyers came out tomorrow and announced that they traded Ivan Provorov for Cale Makar, I wouldn't be unhappy about it. Cale Makar is a very, very good hockey player. My thing is, you have Provorov cost-controlled through his prime.
Yeah, but I hear that. I'm just talking straight talent.
And Cale Makar is great. And Cale Makar is burning, I believe, the second year of his ELC.
Right.
If that's the case, then next year he's going to sign his extension, and he's going to get a ton of money.
I understand all that.
And again, I like Cale Makar, and if the Flyers traded Ivan Provorov for Cale Makar one for one, I'm thrilled. But if I'm the GM, if I'm signing the check, if I'm making the trade, if I'm whatever, it's hard for me to offer up a guy like Provorov.
No, I get that. And what I'm saying is Provorov's in year four?
He is in his fourth season. Okay. That's correct. He's in the first year of his new deal.
How much better do you see him potentially getting? Do you think he wins a Norris? Do you think he competes for a Norris for the next 10 years and wins one or two?
I think he's in the conversation, yes.
I think he's got that ability potentially in him.
What I think Ivan Provorov's going to do, I think we've seen the top end of Ivan Provorov's game. I think what's going to happen as he gets older is that we're going to start to see that more often. Now we only see it, you know, let's say 30% of the time. I think as time goes on, he's going to get more consistent and we're going to see top level play out of him more often. I don't necessarily know if he's going to get better. He's just going to be closer to the top of his range for longer.
All the time. Right. Now that's right. Fair. But I do think if he's going to be in that Norris discussion, you will see some elevation to his game.
I agree.
There would have to be. Okay. I think it's potentially there. But I think it's a 10%, 20%, you know, ceiling where Makar is in year, you know, one. And, you know, just to me, the ceiling is just, again, I could see this guy winning five or six Norris trophies and being, you know, in top three and voting for the next, you know, 15 years. He's that good.
Oh, for sure. I'm definitely glad he's in the Western Conference.
Absolutely.
That's all I have to say. I'm glad I don't have to see him in a playoff series that's not the Stanley Cup final, honestly.
Yep.
Because Cale Makar is really good at hockey.
Yeah, to me, he's as much responsible for what's going on in Colorado as their top line.
I agree.
Because the top line's been there.
Right. And by the way, the goalies are Hellebuck and, I believe, Bishop.
Correct.
I'm sorry. The goalies are Binnington and Hellebuck. I'm sorry.
I got you. Okay, you're talking for the Central.
Jordan Binnington and Connor Hellebuck
They got that right.
Yeah, Cale Makar is... I agree. Like... When Drew Doughty, PK Subban, when like that generation of very, very good defensemen, you know, Roman Yossi's there, Shea Weber's there, when the old guard of top tier defensemen in the league retires and moves out, Cale Makar is going to step right in to, okay, well, I'm in the Norris Finals every year now, and he's going to be that guy.
Yeah, I think I can see him being top three in 2022. I think he's that good.
Yeah. I mean, that's only a couple years from now. Right. So.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think he's that good.
I honestly, legitimately, I think he'll finish top five in the Norris voting this year.
That's possible, which as a rookie is crazy.
Right. Maybe not top three. Maybe not a true finalist, but I think he's up there. I think he's in the conversation. I think he gets significant votes.
And if he doesn't, it's only going to be a name recognition thing. It's not going to be a value thing. I mean, the guy clearly deserves to be top three.
Exactly. That's the Central team. Moving on, the Pacific team. Connor McDavid, obviously. Logan Couture, Leon Draisaitl, Ryan Getzlaff, Elias Pettersson, Matthew Tkachuk. Those are your forwards. I don't really think there's any problems there.
No, I mean, it also shows you a little bit of why the West isn't very good.
Right, and Getzlaff's there because you got to get a duck in.
Right.
But other than that, you know, all of those guys are in their spots. You know, McDavid and Draisaitl have been spectacular. Couture's been really, really good for... a pretty bad Sharks team. Pettersson has shown signs of being a superstar in Vancouver.
Absolutely.
Matthew Tkachuk might be the most entertaining player in the Western Conference.
Yep, absolutely. And one of the most underrated players in the league.
Yeah, and I think part of that is because he plays out west.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it.
And Matthew Tkachuk, he's really good too. I'm a huge fan of Matthew Tkachuk.
Yep.
He reminds me a lot of a slightly less talented but slightly more antagonistic Travis Konecny.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's kind of in that same, and that's not to say he's not talented, because he is. He had that, I don't know if you saw it, a couple months ago, he scored.
Yeah, through his legs. Back, yeah.
Between the legs, overtime winner with less than a second to go. And it was the most ridiculous goal.
And it wasn't a move like he was trying to, it was the way the play developed, he had to
he
do that
to get the
get
puck,
it off.
And that's
exactly
how he had to do it. Right?
Exactly.
He elevated the puck, as we keep talking about. The defensemen in the Pacific are Brett Burns, Drew Doughty, no surprises, and then Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, as bad as the Kings are, I think Doughty's still at that level.
Oh, and again, and if you have to put a King there, it's going to be Dowdy.
Yeah.
You know, if you again, have to put a king
Kopitar,
in the game.
Kopitar could have been there as well, but...
yeah, he's kind of on his way out.
He's always that good. No, I'm just saying he's always that good. No, he didn't deserve it over any of the other six, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying he's still a very, very, very good player. But Dowdy's still playing at a high level. He deserves to be there.
And then Quinn Hughes is another guy that I'm really excited to see in an all-star game.
The surprise of the group, yep.
Right, because I haven't seen Quinn Hughes play much. You know, the Flyers have played Vancouver...
Twice
already. I think they're done with Vancouver.
Yeah, pretty sure.
And Quinn Hughes was, you know, okay. He was pretty unspectacular in those games. I don't remember him standing out in any way.
Right.
But it'll be really a lot of fun to see him in the 3-on-3 tournament. I am very excited. I was a big fan of him coming out of the draft. And
I'm surprised he got the nod a little bit over Giordano. A little bit. I'm not saying he didn't deserve it. It was just the name again, the name recognition thing. I would thought Giordano would have got that nod, but
yeah, especially because he won the Vezina last year? Or no, I'm sorry, the Norris, I believe
years
last
ago,
year.
Right? Or was it last year? I thought it was 2 years ago. But yeah, so but you know, that's what we're doing. And, we're doing our surprises and our
Right, and then the Flyers might have the best, or I'm sorry, the Pacific Division, rather, might have the best goalies of the bunch. They have Marc-Andre Fleury and Darcy Kemper.
I'm going to say not the best goalies of the bunch, but maybe the best, the goalies having the best years of the bunch.
It's fair to say.
Yeah, I'm not a Kemper fan. I don't think he's all that, but he's having a fantastic freaking season.
Well, and even if you look over his last couple seasons, he's starting to put together some really quality cases.
A couple of years ago, he had a good run with, was it Minnesota? But what he's done in Arizona is he's as responsible for them being in first place as anything that's going on over there.
Yeah, I agree. He's been mostly a backup through his career. Up until 2017-18, he had never played more than 31 games in a season.
Right, and that was with Minnesota, right?
That was with Minnesota, right. Yeah. He spent 1 year in L.A. He played 19 games, had a 210 goals against, and a 932 save. It's pretty good. 2017-18, he only played 10 games. Last year, he played 55 games for Arizona. 233 goals against, which is, you know, not great. But he had a 925 save.
Yeah.
Which is unreal. So I think Kemper's starting to get to the point where you have to take him seriously because he's now in his second season of being a starter and being very good.
Yeah. Hey, just a quick shout out to former Flyers who are coaching. They're doing a fantastic job across the board.
They really are.
Rick Tockett, great job in
Arizona.
But I digress,
Craig Berube, in St. Louis. Yep. You know, obviously, Dave Haxtell, assistant coaching in Toronto, as everyone knows.
I'm not taking that bait. I've actually gone a whole episode without mentioning his name.
Didn't John Stevens just get a gig somewhere, too? I think he's back in L.A., maybe in their minor league. I don't know. I thought it was a minor league. I believe John Stevens is back in the coaching ranks, too.
Yeah, so, I think I heard that.
Another former Flyer there, although he was more well known as a Phantom in the town, but either way.
So when is the All-Star game exactly? I know it's coming up within a couple weeks, or is it early February?
So the Flyers have their bye week coming up in a couple of weeks. The game itself is on the 25th.
Okay, I thought it was coming up. Okay,
January 25th. The Flyers will have off from the 22nd through the 30th.
Which I'm assuming most teams are off if it's All-Star.
Well, if you remember, they do the bye week, and like half the teams get the bye week before the All-Star break. The other half get the bye week after the All-Star break.
Right.
So they kind of stagger it out a
little
bit.
But there's no games for any teams for like a day or two before to a day or two after.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, I think. Right. Yeah. And we'll have the skills competition. We'll have the game. We'll have the blah, blah, blah. And that's always a lot of fun.
Yeah,
do you watch the skills competition?
Yeah, absolutely. Assuming there's nothing crazy going on, I like to tune in and see who's doing what. Yeah.
Now, I don't mean to spring this on you, but what's your favorite all-star format? Because like I was always a fan of Team World versus Team North America that they did every other year or whatever it was.
I actually like the current.
Okay, you like the 3-on-3?
Yeah, because it's
because there have been a couple different formats throughout the year. It was Eastern Conference, Western Conference, and then there was the couple years there where there were team captains and they picked their own teams. That was kind of fun.
Yeah, but then once in whatever format you selected the team, it ultimately ended up with nobody wanting to really play defense anyway, and nobody's blocking shots. It's not
3-on-3 is great.
The 3-on-3, you're not playing hockey anyway. It's all skill and skating, so I like it. I'm not expecting anybody to lay out and try to block a shot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I kind of wish they would go back to the team captains format. Like, so this year they set up a voting system.
But with the 3-on-3?
Yes.
Yeah, totally. That'd be cool.
So what I would want, ideal world here, is all those names I just read you, those guys are all still in the All-Star game.
Okay.
The captains, one for each division, they're still the captain. That's fine. Two nights before the draft, we just talked about there's no games Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Saturday is the All-Star competition. Sunday is the All-Star game.
Right.
Friday night, fantasy draft.
That'd be great TV.
You got your four captains, and they all draw straws or play rock, paper, scissors for the first pick or whatever they do. And then you have a fantasy draft. And I'm sure the players would hate it because they hated it several years ago when they did it in Columbus.
They would hate the selection. But once it's done, I think it would actually make for some good TV and good interviews of people playing with the other people that they don't normally get to play with or even play against often. Yeah, exactly. Personal. I think that was a good word.
Whoever takes Matthew Tkachuk has to take Drew Doughty just so they play on the same team. You know, things like that would really spice up. Instead, it's like,
exactly. Makes for interesting interviews.
Travis Konecny is going to play with Alexander Ovechkin. That's neat.
Right.
But it would be way cooler if he was playing with Connor McDavid and Marc-Andre Fleury was the goalie. And you know what I mean? If you could really play around with things. So I would love for them to go back to the fantasy
draft. Yeah, that'd be cool. I agree with you.
Same format.
I don't think they will, but it would be cool.
No, they definitely won't. But like, you can still have the same teams. You can still have the same like tournament format where you play the round robin and the blah blah blah.
Right.
But just give me fantasy draft teams. I think the fans would love it.
Yeah, and it would make good TV, like I said, for the selection itself, and I think compelling TV for the interview process on the bench during games as well. I think that would be an interesting dynamic.
I absolutely agree, and you know, we did talk about that game's in a couple of weeks. They're doing last man in voting, so you can go online and vote for people that you didn't make it that you think should. I know Claude Giroux is receiving quite a push. Dylan Larkin is receiving a push.
That's the guy to me of all the names that we've gone through today. That should definitely be in the game is Larkin.
Well, you saw his tweet, right?
No.
He tweeted out begging fans not to vote for him because he'd rather have the days off.
I don't know. I don't know enough about Dylan Larkin. Hopefully that doesn't say all you need to know about Mr. Larkin.
Well, listen, look at that Detroit team.
Yeah, that's but still, you're either a competitor or you're not.
No, and I'm sure he's a competitor and he's having a good season. He's putting up good numbers. But at the same time, man, it's tough to play for that team.
Competitors don't say stuff like that.
Alexander Ovechkin has already announced that he's not playing in the game.
That's a much different situation. He's 104. He's accomplished everything there is to accomplish in the game. He may catch Gretzky in goals.
I think he might.
He wants to take an All-Star game off. I'm okay with that.
Well, he did it last year, and I think maybe the year before that, too. It's really funny because he comes out and says, I'm not playing. And the NHL says, okay, well, if you're going to skip it, we're going to suspend you a game. I don't know if you knew that.
No,
they put that in.
I did.
Yeah, if you're healthy and you choose not to play, you have to. Well, okay, whether you're healthy or not, you have to miss a game. You have to miss either the game before the All-Star game or the game after the All-Star game to avoid a suspension.
That sounds like a slippery slope for the NHL.
Well, they want to encourage people to play because.
No,
you
I understand
pro-
that, but
you
if you're
the
if you're,
Pro Bowl
if you're
every year, how
to
bad pull? Is the Pro Bowl?
No, I understand, but if you're healthy enough to play. But you still have a nagging injury that you want to heal over the break. I mean, what the hell?
Then you get a one-game suspension.
Yeah, I don't like that.
They do let you choose. They let you choose if you take... Like, Ovi gets to pick what game he's suspended for, basically.
And he shouldn't
have to
miss. The game
before the All-Star game or the game after the All-Star game.
Yeah, no, he shouldn't have to miss a game.
Well, I mean, they made that rule a couple years ago.
I hear it's a rule. I'm saying I don't like it.
Well, but if the rule didn't exist... Nobody would play. We'd be watching the AHL All-Star game.
Nah, I'd screw with that. I mean, if Ovechkin was 29 years old, I'd have a problem with it. He's earned enough goodwill to say something like that. Larkin hasn't. He hasn't accomplished a thing.
Well, you know, on that note, then, you know, forget Dylan Larkin, I guess.
I guess that's the name of this episode. Larkin hasn't accomplished a thing.
I guess. We'll figure it out. We'll leave that one up to Mike.
Who's Larkin?
Right.
Now, I know our listeners know Dylan Larkin.
Yes. And you know what? Why don't you guys tweet us what you think the name of the show should be, even though the show will already be out by the time you hear
it.
What would you have named this show? You can tweet us what you think the name of the show should have been on Twitter, at YWTPodcast. Or you can tweet producer Mike, at Mike_Diletto, or even Mike Sr. here, at Mike from S Jersey. Or you can talk about the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Sports Talk Philly, Spotify. You can talk about it anywhere. Tell your friends, share it. You know, something that we haven't really talked too much about is iTunes reviews. I don't know if the listeners know this. You can go on iTunes. If you listen to us on an iPhone or, you know, any sort of Apple device, you can go to the App Store or the iTunes Store and review us via your podcast app. That helps the show grow. That helps us talk to advertisers. That helps us really acknowledge our fan base. So if you guys want to go leave us a review, you absolutely can. And you can do that on iTunes. And, you know, just go where you listen to the show and there's a little thing to give us 5 stars. That'd be great.
Yeah, just real quick to jump in there. And, you know, I'm a tech dinosaur and I have no idea what I'm talking about. So whatever it is Kyle just said to do, please, please do it. We would love feedback. Okay.
Yes. Absolutely.
That's a huge thing for us. And we welcome that, both good and bad. Please give us whatever feedback you feel appropriate.
Any and all of it. Let's go. And you can give it to us on any of those social media channels. Again, the Twitter is at YWT Podcast. And we look forward to it. And until then, that's going to do it for this show. But on our way out here, we're done with the hockey talk. But it is playoff football season, and Mike has some things to say. So if you're just here for the hockey, we will see you next week. If you want to stick around for a little tiny bit of football talk, we're going to have it right here at the end of the show.
Yeah, it's almost like the 7 or 6 seconds for the Sixers. Ding dong, the witch is dead. The Patriots are done. Stick a fork in them. Thank God. And go Birds.
So is that the end of the dynasty, or are they coming back
next
year?
It's over. Nope, they're done. Stick a fork in them.
Okay, so they're winning the next 3 Super Bowls. Got
zero.
Because that's how it works.
I'll bet my house on it.
All right, we're recording this at 11:47 on Sunday morning. What's the score of the Eagles game? Give me a prediction.
24-20 Eagles.
Okay. And that'll be the prediction. I'll say 24-21 Eagles. And until then, we'll see you guys next week. Go Birds.